today's featured guest, Harry S. Dent Jr. Harry S. Dent Jr., editor of the free newsletter Survive and Prosper, H.S. Dent Forecast newsletter as well. He offers current economic analysis of the financial market trends, also author of several bestsellers. Welcome back, Harry S. Dent Jr.
Well, nice to be back, Chris.
You know, a lot of volatility in the markets. 2016 has been, I think we've seen some sea change events. The stock market, not uncommon to see 1,500, almost 2,000 point swings. And the Dow Jones Industrials. We haven't seen anything like that since 2008, 2009. Let's start off with U.S. shares. Give us your input, please.
What most important has happened, Chris, is the market lost momentum after the Fed tapered in late 2014. The market's basically gone sideways since then. And up into May of 2015, the market was just barely making new highs instead of making stronger new highs as it had done for years in this rally with all the stimulus behind it. Now, since May, every time the market goes down, like those 2,000 points you're talking about, you know, it'll go down 10% or 15% or whatever, but it'll bounce back fiercer than ever. But every rally since then has not been able to make a new high for the first time. So to me, this bubble is over and the market's trying to make a new high here. I think it'll fail. I think we've seen the best of this rally. We may see a little higher, but I think not much more. And I think the next downturn in the markets will be more serious than the ones we saw late last year and early this year. And by the summer, people are going to realize this bubble is over and that we're not going into a correction in a bull market, but we're going into a bear market that's going to last several years. But we're going to see the worst of it by late 2017. So I think we are starting a serious crash. And just like in 2007 and 8, it took many months of the market only going down 10 or 15% and then rallying and trying to make new highs. And then it all fell apart in just a few months between June and November of 2008. I think this is the last chance for investors. You know, we warned in a lot of other investments, commodities and gold way back, and people thought that wasn't a real top. Well, everybody knows commodities have long topped, and gold is in a bear market, even though it's rallying now in a deserved rally. This time, where we are leveraging the biggest debt and financial asset bubble in modern history, and it's just starting. And people still don't get that, you know, this is a bubble that's got to burst, and this is not a correction. This is not a correction. I cannot say that more times.
Firstly, on U.S. shares, a bubble, what it's really doing is reeling in the retail investors for a shellacking. Firstly, and then we'll get to a couple of the other important ones, i.e. leverage, as well as precious metals. You know, I'm seeing signs of your U.S. shares comments, that whole ontology. We see that unfolding when you look individual. Each week, you know, many of us put out candidates for our subscribers, and I comb through a list of, you know, just the top companies with the best fundamentals, but even many of those have not recovered the way that the indices have recovered. That, to me, is a bearish, contrarian indication that says, wait a minute, are the powers that be pumping up these indexes, or is it just the easiest way for the big money, you know, to participate in the rally and boost their quarterly end-of-quarter profits, make investors and hedge fund managers look a little better? That's the first thing. So, you know what? I'm on board with you. I think this could be the top, especially when you look at price-to-earnings ratios, as we've seen across the board in the CAPE ratios. Many of these are unsustainable at any profit level. I'd like to move on, though, to the next topic. And that's levered. I'd like your thoughts on just what the implications of this could be, because this is a genie that's been let out of the bottle that I only think maybe 1 in 10 financial analysts and economists really has their mind wrapped around the idea of leverage. And you know, you can go into the FX market and you can get 40 to 1, 100 to 1 leverage on just $1 or $100. Give us an idea of what this means for the U.S. and global economies.
Well, you know, Chris, I mean, there's still $550 trillion, that's not a typo, $1 trillion in credit default swaps and derivatives around the world. A lot of them held and backed by major banks. Deutsche Bank is the worst, and people would think German banks are sound. JP Morgan is the second worst, and then many, many more. There's two, we've gone, debt in the world has gone from like 180 trillion total around the world to 250 now. So after the last correction, instead of deleveraging debt and kicking back and getting more sound, all this stimulus, all this low interest rate, zero interest rate policy has just encouraged more borrowing. Now, especially in emerging countries who are in the most trouble and going down the fastest because of the crash in commodity prices, which was caused by China's slowdown, we have more leverage than ever. And again, with zero interest rates, like you said, I mean, hedge funds, investors in all so many ways can now leverage up so cheaply that we basically just have a casino economy. Banks aren't taking money and lending it out, and consumers aren't borrowing money that much, or businesses, because they all overborrowed in the boom and in the bubble into 2007. So this theory that, oh, if the Fed pumps money in the economy, it'll get lent and spent, is just not happening. It's just going into speculation, and speculation causes bigger bubbles, which we have bigger bubbles in a lot of the state, bigger bubbles and definitely bigger bubbles in real estate around the world, and massive stock bubbles everywhere that are just going to have to burst. There's no way for this to end. Bubbles don't correct. They burst. They build up exponentially until they can't go any farther, and they don't come down slowly. They crash. People just don't get this, and all I do is go on media, and everybody I debate says, well, Harry, this isn't a bubble because it's not as bad as the tech bubble, but price-earning ratios aren't 44. They've never been 44 in history except for one time in the most perfect economy in the 90s with falling inflation, strong technology growth and productivity, the strongest years of spending for the baby boom, and a positive geopolitical cycle where nothing, absolutely nothing went wrong in the world after the fall of Berlin Wall. This is not that era. So price earnings ratios now, cyclically adjusted by Shiller, the best way to do it, average earnings, not peak earnings, are at 27, as high as they've been in any time in six other bubble and major bull market peaks, except the early 2000 bubble was higher and the 1929 bubble was higher. The market is very overvalued, especially when you take into account the fact that the world simply is. I mean, where is there not civil wars? You know, where is there not problems in the world? Where is there not terrorism, as this morning again? And the stock market's, you know, down a teeny bit after another major terrorist attack in Europe. What is wrong with this market? It is a market on crack. It is delusional, and it's being fed by free money and speculation, and it is going to go down so hard when it goes down, people aren't going to believe it. That's the only way this can be resolved. There's no other way out of this. 70% in the next 2 years, Chris. S&P and Dow, the major U.S. stock market.
You do realize the implications of a move like that.
Yeah. You think people are pissed off now and voting for Trump and Sanders. Wait until that happens.
But what about the Federal Reserve and all of our wonderful policymakers? Surely they have a bag of tricks in store for this.
Yeah, they've had a bag of tricks for 6 years, 7 years now. Looks where it's gotten us. A bigger bubble is going to burst. This is going to be the biggest single failure of monetary policy since John Law in 1720 in the Mississippi and South Seas bubbles, the greatest stock crashes of their time in Europe, because central governments had high debts and basically sold off phony assets like the Mississippi swampland and the South Seas trading company to the public, financed by low interest rates by a Federal Reserve-like bank back then, a central bank. This is what central banks do. They try to make everything fine. They keep pumping up the economy. They keep lowering interest rates. They keep inducing speculation until the bubble blows. And this is not going to go down well for central banks. We may not have any central banks after this. They will lose so much credibility.
No, it's a powerful statement. And if I could parallel your thoughts for a moment, you know, there really are some interesting similarities. If you do look at the Mississippi scheme, they sent hundreds and hundreds of people in these rickety boats to Louisiana, promising them the promised land. And it was marsh and swampland, as we all know. We have the bayou. What we currently have, I think you might agree, is really backed by nothing. At least you had the Mississippi property. No one could give it away fast enough. The King of France eventually sold it to the United States for pennies on the dollar simply because they didn't want it on their books anymore. I think that the U.S. could be facing something even worse, but you know they're going to go down fighting. So give us an idea of how that plays out.
The one government that is the most restricted right now is the U.S. Fed, because we tapered, stopped printing free money. And Japan kept doing it more and stepped it up three times. Europe's doing it again strongly. It's easier for them to keep upping the ante, but it's going to be a major decision for the Fed after tapering number one and then number two, raising short-term rates just that quarter of a point, to turn around and say, oops, we were wrong. We're not in a sustainable recovery, and we have to start lowering rates again, go to negative interest rates, and have to start QE again. That is going to be a huge turnaround. And so they're not going to do that too abruptly. And I think by time the U.S. Fed reacts, I think by the summer, and especially by the end of this year, it's going to be obvious we're in a recession. It's going to be obvious that Italy is failing, Greece is failing again, Southern Europe. And then, yes, at some point, not only is all central banks going to try to up the ante, but look, they've already done it. Japan has stimulated QE since early 2013 now for 3 years, three times the rate we did at our peak, or Europe and the other thing, and they're back in recession. And their stock market's going down after going up. This stuff doesn't work at a point. These central banks are going to keep fighting. They have no other choice. As soon as they stop these stimulus policies, we'll go down even faster, and they know that. But they are going to go down anyway. They're trying to keep a bubble. Their solution to the bubble bursting is to just keep pumping up the bubble, because you can't pump up lending when everybody's too much in debt. And you can't grow when businesses have already overexpanded jobs and capacity. There's no way to get out of this except for keep pumping up the bubble and just hoping it doesn't burst while you're still in office as a Federal Reserve chairman or as a president or a premier of a country. That's all everybody's just doing, is trying to push this thing to the next administration in every country, because nobody wants the Great Depression on their watch, and it is coming. There's no way to avoid this.
I can understand now why you might be a little bit pessimistic on the commodity sector under such a scenario, but relative to paper assets, even though the actual dollar price of the metals could decline during a crash, if that comes to pass, the only refuge that might have any value at all relative to paper assets, which could still be declining, but relative, would be precious metals.
Maybe down the road, but not here. I mean, here's the good news about commodities. They've already been demolished. Commodities are already in a depression. Iron ore and copper and all the key industrial commodities are down 70-80% already. So they don't have as much downside. Certainly, they're not going to like the world falling into a deeper downturn. But they've already been demolished, and precious metals have been hit pretty darn bad. The safe haven, Chris, and I've had to say this over and over again, and nobody gets it. The only asset in the last crash and since that has gone up in value has been the U.S. dollar versus other currencies, and the highest quality sovereign bonds in the best countries, you know, U.S., Germany, whatever. That's been it. I mean, when you have a bubble burst, all financial assets have been inflated by too much debt and too much speculation, all of them, even most bonds and certainly junk bonds. So everything goes down. And I'm not a fan of the U.S. dollar forever. I'm just saying, in the early stages of this crisis, to debate people like Peter Schiff all the time who say, the dollar's falling, the dollar's crashing. Peter, the dollar has been nothing but up since the beginning of this crisis in early 2008. It was up the most when the crisis was at its worst in the second half of 2008. And even in the recovery with unprecedented money printing, the dollar's been more up than down, and it's up 40% off of its lows in early 2008. The dollar has been the safe haven, and gold and silver have held up better than most commodities, but they're still down. Gold's still down, I don't know, 40% off its highs or something like that recently. And I've been calling for months that gold was due for a major counter rally, that it had gotten oversold and overly pessimistic, and it's rallying here. But I'm telling you, I think the gold doesn't make it much past 1400 before it turns down. And I think my forecast is gold's going to be at $700 by mid to late 2017, and that might be a long-term bottom. Because, again, I think gold's going to hold up better than other commodities.
Let me throw one proviso in here before we continue with this and get too negative. If you ever take a look at the gold-to-ruble ratio or ruble-to-gold ratio, the same thing was occurring in Russia until the oil crisis. And then you saw gold make an about-face and blast higher by 100% in just over 2.5 months' time. So there are times when, King Canute can't command the tides, and we can't always know the future when it comes to markets. That's why I think you'd agree a good solid 10, 15, or 20% precious metals portfolio ratio is always a good idea.
Gold is the single best inflation hedge. And you look at history, our history has been mostly inflationary. Deflationary periods like the 30s are rare, and I think we're entering another one. So I would only be more skittish in a time like that. You know, but if gold went down, and when I'm using the 700, I use 7 to 750, but that is where gold corrected in 2008. And it went down 33% before it bubbled up with all the money printing at first. So that is the natural. At that level, I would consider adding gold to my portfolio because that could be a bottom, although I think down the road it could go lower. But that's when gold at least erases most of its bubble. And it was a bubble, by the way. Gold bubbled like everything else. It went up 8 times in 10 years. That's a bubble.
You say gold loves an inflationary environment. Yes, we had seen some signs of deflation. However, you do have to recognize, I'm sure you'd have to agree on a weekly basis, the greenback has broken 100% of its support levels, might be entering a downtrend. That's number one. Number two, we've got the U.S. Fed, rumors, hints, innuendo, that we may actually see negative interest rates, and it looks like there will be at most one or two more quarter point rate hikes.
Chris, you did not have to worry about rate hikes. Mark my words on this. And if it happens, there might be one more. The economy is going to be so bad by the end of this year, there's not going to ever be talk of a rate hike ever again.
The only move they have in the coach's playbook, first page in the book, is inflate, inflate, inflate under that scenario.
Japan has, again, done QE at 3 times the rate that we ever did, continued, and gone to negative interest rates in recent months. And guess what? Its stock market's down. Guess what? Its economy's in recession. It's their death.
I would just like to accentuate your points here and say maybe there's some tangents we haven't quite investigated fully yet. So, for instance, I'm with you, BOJ. But let's not also forget we have several European individual countries, not to mention the EU, all now issuing negative interest rates. You know, the biggest trend right now in Europe, as well as Japan, is buying fortified home safes and banks because people don't want to put their money in the bank because you lose money. Under those scenarios, if we see something similar in the United States, gold, which hasn't corrected in the terms of many other currencies, actually remains in an uptrend, might be the best safe haven because you can't lose interest on gold.
I'm 100% on this, and gold correlates incredibly well with inflation, and we're seeing nothing but lower inflation and deflation ultimately. Second, if you go all the way back to 1700s and adjust gold for inflation or real estate, for that matter, gold does not appreciate. It is an inflation hedge, and commodities tend to be inflation hedge, and we're heading into a deflation era. If I thought we were heading into an inflationary era, yes, I'd buy gold. If I was in the Russian ruble, yes, I'd buy gold because, yeah, the ruble collapses. Of course, gold's going to go up in rubles. The U.S. dollar is not collapsing. You've been in a 103 to 1, 93 to 100 range now for months, and if it breaks off the top of that, it's going to go up to 120 at least. When the dollar goes to 120, then I would consider buying gold because I think the dollar would have pretty much run its course, and then I'll no longer be bullish on the U.S. dollar. But I am bullish on the U.S. dollar, especially in the early stage of this crisis. And the U.S. dollar keeps going up, gold's going to keep going down.
You know, that's what makes a market, right? I mean, we have to have bulls, we have to have bears. I mean, I can't see how you would prefer to add U.S. shares to your portfolio over a beaten down asset class like the precious metals.
Any day of the week right now, I'd take commodities over stocks, but I just don't like any of them.
But on a purely valuation basis, gold is superior to shares. Can we agree on that?
Absolutely. I again, got to buy something, a risk asset. I would buy gold over U.S. stocks any day of the week.
Harry S. Dent Jr., tell folks more about H.S. Dent Forecast Newsletter, your ETF, as well as Survive and Prosper.
Simplest thing, you go to harrydent.com. We will send you our latest book for free. You just pay $4.95 for shipping. And we have a free daily newsletter. It's actually been changed to Economy and Markets. And we can put, all you do is put your email address in. You're on our free newsletter. We have other newsletters, but to get to know us, it's a great newsletter with high content and no risk, no money, nothing. Just put your email in, you're done. HarryDent.com.
All right, we appreciate your thoughts. We'll look forward to hearing more of those thoughts in 2016. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chris.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.